This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the Milkpacking District, in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now, clearing her throat and also preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
President Obama has signed a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. 500 marijuana plants are found during a raid in Portland. And a man in Albany is accused of burning down his ex-wife's house.
Did you say that Fess Parker signed a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
No, it's Fess Obama. No, Barack Obama.
Damn you, Don Taylor.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour.
And now,
without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, December 22nd, 2010. As the crowd cheered, yes, he can, President Obama signed the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell on Wednesday.
It must be great to just be able to take as long as you want to do whatever you want and then to only do it in some weird half-ass you got dragged into it fashion and did it against your will thing.
And
people then just, you're awesome!
Thank you for actually doing something that you promised you'd do.
Will you heal my leprosy?
He finally made good on a campaign promise and ended the ban on openly gay soldiers serving in the military. In order to accommodate all the people who wanted to attend the signing ceremony, the White House had to book an auditorium at the Interior Department. While Obama has come under fire from gay rights activists, today's signing comes after months of political opposition and is a watershed moment for gay Americans and the surprisingly active lame duck Congress.
Goddamn, how depressing it must be to realize that you were only able to get something done because Joe Lieberman helped you out. How does that feel, Barack Obama? And you look in the mirror and you realize that Joe Mentum was responsible for helping to get this done. It's good that our gay men and women who are serving in the military are going to be able to go overseas now and fight for freedom, such as the ability to marry at home. Sorry about that.
Yeah, so that you can fight for our freedoms and then come home and spend time with your loved one who's in the hospital.
As long as no one sees you do it, Dawn.
As long as you say you're their cousin.
That's right.
The repeal also comes after a December survey found that the policy's repeal would not negatively impact military readiness. It'll take several weeks for military officials to rewrite the policies and 60 more days before the ban is officially lifted. And even then, CNN notes that gay and lesbian service members will not have every right and privilege accorded to heterosexual members of the military, largely because of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act.
Well, you don't want to give them total equality, Dawn. Then they just get all pushy about everything.
They'll be all uppity.
Yeah, that's right.
They'll expect stuff.
Yes.
Framing the repeal, well, you know, that it's that whole agenda where they want special rights that other people have, like, you know, the same ones.
Yeah.
Framing the repeal as a civil rights victory, Obama remarked that people will look back on the moment and wonder why it was ever a source of controversy in the first place.
Will people do that, Barack Obama? Will they really?
People.
Not so much folks in this case, apparently, but people will do that.
And Clinton's going, You know, I was the one who actually got people talking about it in the first place with my don't ask, don't tell thing. And all I do, I just get crap for that.
Is this
would be President Obama explaining what all of this means.
No longer will our country be denied the service of thousands of patriotic Americans.
Well, I understand this. Just before we plunge on ahead here. So they still actually don't have the right to marry, which, by the way, that right is a thing that your president opposes, just in case anybody's curious about that. Did he really just frame this as, so now they'll be able to work for us?
Right, because apparently there are thousands and thousands of gay people who would be in the military if only they could talk about being gay.
I like the
idea. That was the only thing that was holding them back from getting shot at.
I also like the idea that he's making no attempt to hide the fact that this is essentially just so they can just go do crap for us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, really, we were just running out of people to wait on us, in this case in the military, and so we thought, gays.
No longer will our country be denied the service of thousands of patriotic Americans who were forced to leave the military, regardless of their skills, no matter their bravery or their zeal, no matter their years of exemplary performance, because they happen to be gay.
So now what happens to the people that got forced out? Do they get to come back?
Just going
to
ask that question because when he says no longer will they be denied the service of thousands who were forced out, past tense.
Yeah.
And then also future tense, we will not be denied. So
over 14,000 soldiers have been discharged since the policy was implemented in
1993.
Really? Yeah.
I had no idea that it was 14,000.
Yeah.
Jesus.
A great many of them are in really important positions doing things like translation and...
why would we need that, Don?
You know, because you've got a lot of, like, oddly enough, very highly educated people who go into the military and do things like listen to radio transmissions and then transcribe them into English from Arabic. And then they get kicked out of the military because, you know, they're gay. And that could, like, affect their job.
You know, well, I really don't know, and it's and I'm not really sure anybody knows because I saw somebody asking this question last night on the TV, and it just sort of seemed to be a thing that yet again somebody else was going to have to ask. Well, what about me? And then somebody was going to say no, and somebody else would say yes, and then Kevin Pollak and Tom Cruise have to stomp around the house while it's raining outside, and he has to talk about his dead father, and then you know. I don't know. And then,
I have no idea. You just took like a left turn into crazy town with that one.
A Few Good Men.
Yeah, I know. But still, I just... Okay.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm wondering why he didn't pack. All right. You're listening to Legion of News right here at... See, you know, you were talking... I don't want to get sidetracked by a thing. Yeah. But you were talking about the other day about Tombstone.
Yeah.
And how Tombstone is a fundamentally terrible movie that you can't help loving.
No, it's not. I keep telling you, it's flawed. Terrible.
You said it wasn't very good, though, at one point. You said it was kind of bad, but I understand what you mean by that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm on the same page. I'm on your side on this, sister.
Okay.
I'm just saying I feel the same way about A Few Good Men, which I've watched several times over the last 6 weeks. I go through phases where I'll just glom onto movies and watch them. You're just repeatedly. And I've been watching A Few Good Men a lot. And boy, there's just so much about that movie that's not very good. There's so much about A Few Good Men that is just deeply broken, you know, in every sense. But it doesn't matter because I still love it. So there you go. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday, December 22nd, 2010. Coming up later on this hour, Science on the March. Also, your entertainment news. For today and so forth. If you want to get this program on your mobile device, you can do that. It's mobile.cascadia.fm. It's also available as an MP3 download later on today or legionofnews.com or via iTunes as well. Here is Don Taylor.
I think the train's going by.
I hear the train is coming.
By the way, more on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We have also Mr. Obama saying that no one should have to live a lie.
No longer will tens of thousands of Americans in uniform be asked to live a lie or look over their shoulder in order to serve the country that they love.
Well, you know, sometimes you want to look over your shoulder. I'm just saying.
Don't mock the seriousness of this moment.
To remind you, you know, just who that is.
Okay. Ted? Phil? Hank?
Sergeant Stevens? anyway. Two children were taken into protective custody when deputies found hundreds of marijuana plants during searches at three homes. Multnomah County Sheriff's deputies say they searched homes on Northeast Rocky Butte Drive in Portland, Northeast Pacific in Gresham, and near Southeast Bella Vista Road and Rivercrest Drive in Vancouver on Tuesday. Tu Nhoc Tran, Minh Nhoc Le, Minati Noyen, and Hoi Noyen were arrested and charged with manufacturing marijuana, delivery of marijuana, possession of marijuana, and child neglect.
Do you think it's easy? Let me ask you this. Do you think it's easier for, you know, like in a city like Portland, where the vast majority of people there for the vast majority of law enforcement agents are white? Do you think that, I don't even know where I'm going with this. There's some humor there. I'm trying to navigate it like a thing through another thing that's slightly wider. No, it's eluding me. No, I had a joke all lined up there, and then it just, you know what it is? And then the automated Brunswick machine in my mind came down and just grabbed all 10 pins and took them away, and I don't know where I'm going with that now.
I'll tell you, though, I worked many years ago. I had one of those temp jobs during the time. I was like 19, and I had a temp job working for the Census Bureau, and Noyen is like the Smith of Southeast Asian names.
Is that the N-G-Y-U-E-N?
N-G-U-Y-E-N, yeah. It's like about every third Southeast Asian person is surnamed Noyen.
It's just, well, and words like that are sort of, you know, that's like, it's like how I have to stop every time I spell the word rhythm because it seems like it's missing a vowel somewhere. Yeah. Doesn't even seem like the word ought to be able to move because there's no motion sounds contained within it.
Well, the children belonging to the suspects are between the ages of 4 and 8. Deputies say they found about 500 pot plants, 100 pounds of processed pot, scales, and packaging materials in the homes. The street value of the marijuana is estimated at $1.5 million, they say, which means it's probably actually worth about a third that.
Did they do the thing of standing in front of the the table full of drugs and like banging their fists on the podium and saying, "No more"?
No, but they did have the obligatory camera, you know, video camera sweep on the TV news this morning down the table show you just how much marijuana that actually was.
I wish they the two things they'll do that with are drugs and guns. If they ever find somebody who has a lot of guns, they do the long, like the long steady cam shot, yeah, going like going down the table, just showing everything in a big, like on, like if you're like at the end of some sort of felonious Wheel of Fortune.
I tell you, I got to do that once when I was editing the newspaper in St. Helens. I got to go to the sheriff's office and take the photo of all of the stuff on the table, and it's really interesting to actually be in the room, the conference room with the conference table where the sheriff's department have laid it all out for you to come in and take the photos of, like, all of the stacks of money.
Oh, yeah.
And the bags of meth and the pistols. It's kind of like, this is sort of awesome.
It's like being that guy who dresses up the Big Mac for the commercial. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Oddly enough, they would not leave me alone in the room with the guns and bags of meth.
That's hard to believe.
Four cars, including a Porsche SUV and a Lexus, were used for drug transportation and were also seized. They also the suspects used medical marijuana cards and fake documents to disguise the marijuana growing operation. So, Noyen, I say.
Okay.
An Albany man is accused of setting fire to his estranged wife's apartment in Salem. The fire broke out at the Columbia Village Apartments on Fisher Road on November 13th. Anthony Williams, 28, was indicted by a grand jury on Tuesday on 7 counts of arson. Investigators say he rode his bicycle from Albany to Salem to start the fire. The blaze ended up doing serious damage to the building, which contains 8 apartments, but no one was injured.
All right. Is this young love gone wrong, or?
I don't know. He's 28, so it's not that long. I just like that he apparently had... I bet she took his car, and he was angry about it, and that's why he had to ride his bike.
Do you hear a high-pitched whistling noise coming from somewhere?
It's outside.
All right.
It's something going on outside of our palatial studios.
Okay, as long as it's actually outside, even if it's something dangerous. For a minute, I just thought it was inside my own head.
Yeah. No, not this time.
Okay. You're listening to Legion of News. Hate you. At Cascadia.fm, thank you for joining us. You know, you're a horrible person, and you know the proof of that is that you waited until my eyes were shut there for just a second before you did it, because then I actually, for just a fraction of a second, I was convinced that it actually had started up again inside my brain. So thanks for that. I appreciate
that.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program today. We're talking to Mr. Aaron Mesh, screen editor from Willamette Week, and also our good friend Mr. Siegfried Zeliger will be stopping by to talk about Silent Night, Deadly Night. Going to be playing tonight at the Hollywood Theater. Here is Don Taylor.
New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg is urging the Senate to approve a bill providing health care to 9/11 rescue workers. Joseph Zadroga's son was a police officer who died of respiratory illness attributed to exposure from toxic dust at the World Trade Center. He says other first responders are counting on this bill.
What is the workers? Let's see. I swear to God, I had that.
You should have it.
It should be there. You have no idea how much I just had that cut. Oh, here we go. This is workers. This is workers one mm-hmm. we're talking about here.
They're out there suffering. The families are out there suffering, and they need this help.
It does suck. I mean, I saw these guys doing a press conference last night, and I mean, you know, I'm not trying to say any one job is any more special than anything else, but this is just another one of those things where it seems like the government stick, especially with these guys. I mean, I'm all for the government providing health care just like, you know, to folks, as your president would say, much less these guys who went, you know, into a building because the government, as part of their job description, you know, tells them to do it.
Yeah.
And then the government says, oh, but about that nagging cough you've developed, I'm not going to be able to help you out with that. So sorry.
Well, and, you know, you and I, one of the things you and I have in common, we both are children of people who worked in, you know,
civil service.
You know, my dad was a fireman,
as was mine,
and so I think you and I are both in agreement.
Oh, I'm sorry, my dad was a cop. Yeah.
Well, my dad was a fireman, and he had been a cop before he was a fireman. And the thing is, I think you and I are both sort of in agreement. I don't know, maybe we are. We've never really talked about this, but there's this part of me that just always cringes a little when people refer to policemen and firemen as heroes.
Well, it's a guy doing a job.
You know, a guy who's like runs into a building and saves you. And he's just like was walking down the street on the way to his job as an accountant. That's a hero. A guy who goes into a burning building because he's paid to do it is a guy who's doing his job. But that said, you know, when you look at something like the first responders at the World Trade Center, that was their job. And they were doing this. And it's like, and they are suffering severe health issues because they were doing their job.
Well, it seems like,
and they deserve to be treated for that at government expense.
Well, that's the other thing. Is there a little bit of a social contract there too, of like, you know, because firefighters have a job, I think, not unlike they, you know, the described the military happening, where it's just these long moments of tedium and then just these moments of sheer heart attack inducing terror. But sort of but in exchange for that, you know, you get paid whatever, and then also
and you get health care.
Yeah, and like if you're a firefighter who gets, I don't know, covered in burns or something, we'll opt to help you out with that.
Right.
And you know, and I don't know, it's just ridiculous. The other thing about it is I saw this Discovery Channel special about the they were talking about. I don't think it was all about 9/11 as such, but one of the things they were discussing is how the buildings can, you know, the World Trade Center was made out of, you know, like 575 trillion tons of like concrete and you know, spackle and mortar and brick and whatever, and how they've accounted for like 65% of that, which they put into dump trucks and hauled away to a landfill somewhere, and there's like another 15% that they think is just in the atmosphere floating around
and in people's lungs.
Yeah, that was the, and then they go, well, that leaves 14% of the buildings, and we don't really know what happened to that. And of course, you know what happened to it? It's just been inhaled by firefighters.
Yeah.
Here's the creepiest thing. I get chills actually just thinking about this. And, you know, unless anybody just feel like they need to, like, crank up their email account and send something snarky off to me. When we say it's just a job, I'm not saying it's a job that I want to do.
No, and there are jobs that are inherently more dangerous and, yes, inherently more laudable. You know, being a teacher, being a fireman, being a doctor. I mean, there are certain things that you are definitely doing things that put you at a certain risk and are helping society more than, say, you know, you're sitting and doing a podcast.
I think that's like my thing is the same as yours, is that just when you sort of refer to cops or firefighters or anybody like that as being a hero as a blanket term, then I think what that does is the problem with doing that is that just does a disservice. That does a disservice to, in this case, cops or firefighters who really are heroic, because they probably got a lot of coworkers that are just dicks.
Oh, yeah.
So in any event, what was my point? Backward. Oh, one of the creepiest things ever from 9/11 is there are these indicators that the firefighters wear that would start to go off whenever their oxygen reserves had run really, really low. Whenever they had run out, whenever their tank was at like 5% or whenever it was out or something, it was like a little, like a miniature car alarm basically would go off. And the idea was that was so if you were inside a burning building and you were out of oxygen, that whoever was in there with you, like your colleagues, would be able to find you and go like, hey, there's Ted's thing. He's out of oxygen. Let's go get him. And then they could go down the hall and find you and drag you back out. And so there was this shot, because some of the guys had this sort of like, you know, shoulder-mounted cameras or whatever that were recording. So people outside could sort of assess what the danger inside the building was. Anyway, there's just this one shot of a guy inside, I don't know, whatever the first tower was to collapse. And he's wheeling around trying to get out of the building. And it's like everywhere he turns, you just hear this like forest of these things just going off. And it was so creepy. It was just like, there's like dozens of them in every direction. It was so completely unnerving.
That's horrifying.
Anyway, but it's just one of those things where it just, you know, where it's like your government is just, they're just kind of being dicks about the whole thing. Like, you know, just give the guy some health care.
And Mayor Bloomberg says these workers deserve it.
Wouldn't it be great? He's in New York. Shouldn't he just be able to take off his shoe or something and pound the podium with it and just go like, you guys are being a bunch of dicks.
I think he kind of is starting to, actually.
Cough up the health care.
For the men and women who rushed to our defense on that dark day and in the days that followed, is nothing less than a national duty. America is too great a country to shirk this duty.
He really ought to, you know, he ought to just sort of say, like, and the next time your fat asses weren't rescued from a fire, like, maybe we'll get there, maybe we won't. Mm-hmm. So.
But there have been just so many ridiculous stories that have come out, like, ever since this happened. Like, one specific story, I remember a firefighter, the buildings went down, he heard about the rescue efforts. He went down to help up, suited up, went down to help up, doing stuff. He ended up getting injured. And his insurance company and everybody didn't want to pay his hospital bills because he wasn't actually officially on duty. You know? So, it's...
By the way, somebody... I really hope that this is a sort of meta thing happening here, because otherwise it's just sad. Somebody's typed in the text box, also, teachers are not heroes. And then heroes is misspelled. I really, really hope that was intentional.
This guy's teachers certainly weren't. In fact, I guess they were barely competent.
I'm gonna choose to believe that that was a little intentional bit of a
teachers a bit of is not heroes. With a Z.
Okay, here's Dodd Taylor.
A Longview, Washington man checking his mailbox in the nude was arrested in his birthday suit Tuesday after his neighbors called 911. David Charles Mathers, 55, of Longview, was arrested for indecent exposure. Neighbors told police they were shocked and appalled when they saw Mathers outside the apartment complex in the nude, and that this wasn't the first time he'd wandered around naked.
Nobody ever seems to be appalled without also being shocked. The two were sort of go hand in hand like John and Yoko.
When officers arrived, Mathers had returned to his apartment, and he answered the door naked. The officer had said he asked Mathers twice during the arrest if he wanted to put some pants on, but he declined.
Oh, of course not.
So the officer grabbed a blanket off of Mathers' bed, wrapped it around him, and took him to jail. Investigators said Mathers has mental problems, and they've responded to reports of him walking around naked in the past, but this is the first time it's resulted in arrest. He's being held on $500 bail.
Okay. I have nowhere to go with that. You were listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us later on this hour. Your entertainment news and... It says Penis Christmas. Is that from yesterday
penis
or today?
Penis Christmas. No, that's from today.
Excellent. Later on the day, Penis Christmas, kids. Won't that be fun?
Woohoo!
And everybody comes to their Uncle Rick slap for Penis Christmas. I don't know why I said that. Penis Watch next hour. Also, Joy of Christmas plus Aaron Mesh will be here from Willamette Week. Don Taylor has a top five for today.
Aaron Mesh loves Penis Christmas.
He really does. Our good friend Siegfried will stop by to talk about the Grindhouse feature happening the night at the Hollywood Theater, which is Silent Night, Deadly Night, and so forth. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Excellent. Here's your science. On the march for Wednesday, December 22nd, 2010.
The emergence of the beak on dinosaurs was an evolutionary innovation, according to a new study that found this seemingly simple trait is like nature's Swiss Army knife because it functions as many tools in one. Over time, many dinosaurs replaced their toothy grins with beaks to aid their transition to plant eating, according to a new science published in the latest Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which I'm sure you read cover to cover.
Yes, no, weekly.
As modern animals such as birds and turtles demonstrate, a beak can be adapted to function for a variety of purposes, from processing different food types like nuts, fruits, leaves, and meat, to grooming and other behaviors, said co-author Lindsay Zano. The evolution of the beak was an evolutionary innovation because it was a new anatomical structure that hadn't been available to theropods before. Therefore, it provided a new means for theropods to process foods and engage in other behaviors. She and her colleague came to the conclusion after collecting dietary data for theropods, a group of two-footed dinosaurs colloquially known as predatory dinosaurs. The group includes flesh-eaters like Tyrannosaurus rex, which turns out to be a very primitive, old-school dinosaur. Carnivory is always rare relative to herbivory in animal communities because food availability becomes more scarce as you move up the food chain, said Zano. It takes a ton of plant material to sustain a lot of herbivores and a lot of herbivores to sustain a few carnivores. Many of T-Rex's closest relatives were therefore content with vegetarian food, such as, according to the scientists, they looked at evidence that included fossilized dinosaur dung, stomach contents, tooth marks, gastric stones, and even two dinosaurs locked in the throes of combat.
So vegetarians are lazy, is what you're saying. There's now actual evolutionary evidence.
Exactly.
All right.
Important traits associated with herbivory are tooth loss, beaks, different tooth shapes, such as leaf-pegged conical, multiple tooth types in one animal, tooth elongation, and long necks. The researchers believe beaks evolved at least five times in theropods alone. Other dinosaurs, like ceratopsians and hadrosaurs, also had beaks.
Lazy and bad teeth. Also can't quite get the beak thing right. There you go, vegetarians. That's your instant karma.
A small lighted Christmas tree in the UC Denver laboratory proves the practicality of a novel renewable energy source and points to its enormous potential.
Is this flatulence?
Close. Okay. Very close. Jason Wren, an assistant professor of civil engineering, calls it bug power, referring to the billions of bacteria that help generate electricity from wastewater. The process creates two desirable byproducts. Those bacteria are able to consume the waste and produce electricity as well as clean water. Bacteria in microbial fuel cells essentially eat the waste, in other words, you know, poop, and give off electrons in the process. Those electrons are captured by a graphite brush. Also, Wren recently discovered that salt water could be turned into fresh water as a third simultaneous function. Electricity on one side, treating wastewater on the other, while desalinating seawater in the middle, he said, pointing to his three-chambered reactor. They believe it's very promising. They're working to make the electricity functional, to harvest the energy from the fuel cell in the most efficient way, and at the same time to form the power from a fuel cell into a usable shape, is their goal.
So this is a thing that eats. What do you give it initially? You give it poo.
You give it poop.
You give it poo.
The bacteria. There's bacteria. You add bacteria. The bacteria consume the waste and produce electrons.
And then also turn salt water into fresh water.
Right.
Nature's just insane. I don't mean like weird. I mean it seems as though nature is just clinically insane sometimes.
And they currently are proving that it works at least on a very small scale because in the lab at the University of Denver, they have a Christmas tree that has LED lights that are powered by poop.
Okay.
And that's all the science.
These stories don't, I mean, I'm not saying they're fake, but these stories don't even seem like they can be real sometimes just because they sound so much like they just come out of like Warehouse 13 or something where it's like you're walking by like a Christmas tree and you go, what's that? Oh, it's a Christmas tree powered by poo. And you say, what? Oh, yeah, they're tiny little creatures and you feed them poo and then they just give off electrons. You know, but then they give no further explanation because that was all the writer did. He just wrote that in as like a little bit of color, you know, and some production design for the scene.
Yeah, but then two seasons later, it becomes an entire episode of Stargate.
Yes. All right, there we go. That's not anymore, though. So Stargate's gone? Gone, baby, gone?
Stargate Universe, I guess, got canceled. And I think that was the only current
It was the only
Stargate
vestige of it that was around
thing
like,
that
now.
Was going on. Yeah, because I know for a while there was Stargate Atlantis and I didn't watch any of those, so I don't know.
I'm sorry, we done with science?
We are.
Be gone, science. All right. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. It is Wednesday, December 22nd, 2010. Here is Don Taylor.
Almost a quarter of recent high school graduates who attempted to join the Army were barred because they didn't pass a basic entrance exam, an Education Trust report revealed this week. The study looked at 350,000 graduates between 2005 and 2009 and found that 23% of them didn't get the minimum score of 31 out of 99 that was needed to enroll. The exam, which has been in place since the First World War, tests students on basic reading, science, and math skills and includes questions like, if 2 plus X equals 4, what is the value of X?
Wow, are you kidding me? No, of course you're not.
Military enrollment has been up this year, Army officials worry that a flawed education system might be cutting them off from future recruits. But remember, teachers aren't heroes. The high percentage of failure is especially daunting, given that 75% of those aged 17 to 24 don't even qualify to take the test because they're physically unfit, have a criminal record, or didn't graduate from high school.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad we've kicked those 14,000 gay folk out, though.
We're number one. Number one.
All right. See, this is where. See, and I was a little snarking at you for it yesterday, but this is where I can get back on your side of the fence with it, letting the kids use the spell check during their English exams. Mm-hmm. This really is what happened. Not that I'm any better. It's not like I have some real strong grasp on mathematics or anything.
No.
But I mean, Jesus. I would like to think that the 2 plus what equals 4 concept has not yet eluded me at this point in my life.
Now, right after I graduated from high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And so I went and I talked to the Army.
The recruiter?
The recruiters. And because I wanted to, I knew a guy who worked as a motion picture camera operator. And he had gotten his start in the service. He had worked for a motion picture unit in the Army. And I realized I could go to film school and I could do all that stuff, or I could join the military, maybe get assigned to a film unit. I could learn to operate a camera because I really wanted to do that. So I went and I talked to all the recruiters and stuff, and I ended up having to take the test. And the thing is, I ended up not going into the military. First of all, the whole signing away 4 years of my life thing.
The whole being told what to do thing.
Yeah, boot camp was kind of, but also the fact that they wouldn't promise me anything in particular. It was like my thing was, I'll give you 4 years of my life if
right.
you promise me I can do X.
Right.
And they wouldn't do that. And then it was like, he was like, you might have a better shot with the Marines. I know they're looking for ladies in the Marines.
You and B. Arthur.
And so I went to talk to the Marine recruiter, and he told me that it was awesome for women in the Marines because you never saw combat or anything, and it was basically desk positions and public relations. So you just dressed nice and did your hair and posed for photos.
It really just is looking pretty.
Yeah, it really was. And I was like, so I have to go to boot camp for a desk job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
know.
The thing about when you talk about the guys in the military sort of are very vague about what they're going to give you in return. Which, and I know people say, well, boo-hoo, that's the military life or whatever, which is fine. But, whatever. I mean, if you don't read the contract before you sign, that's your fault, I guess. But on the other hand, the military does market themselves so heavily and so aggressively as being, a place where you can learn valuable life skills that will get you through the rest of your, to get you into the career of your choice. I'm not knocking the military, and I'm not knocking guys who go in the military, because I come from a largely military family. But I will say this, that I have never known a guy, in my life personally, I have never known somebody who went in to the military and came out and did not bitterly complain about how unbelievably untruthful the recruiter was to them, specifically in the area of paying for your college. That's my brother goes on about that all the time. My brother's no fool, but he encourages people to strongly to consider twice and thrice really what you're doing before you go into the military thinking they're going to cover vast amounts of your education, because that just doesn't happen.
Well, and as part of that, though, I did take that test, the upshot of that was that I said no, I didn't want to, but because I was a woman, and at that time they were trying really, really hard to recruit as many women as they possibly could. They were trying to bump up the numbers of women. And I apparently scored really high on the test, and so they kept calling me for 3 years trying to get me to join some branch of the service.
They're like Mormons. You're never going to get off the membership rolls. They're going to consider you. It's like how nobody is allowed to actually quit Harvard. They just sort of assume that you're on sabbatical, and you get a thing every quarter asking you to come back. Here is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Speaking of the military, Jeff Sessions, a Republican from Alabama who's on the Armed Services Committee, worries there will be more reductions in nuclear warheads, and that's a disadvantage to the U.S.
Oh, is this because of the START treaty thing?
The administration has made it clear.
All right, hold on.
This guy is such a pinhead. Dear Lord.
I just have to take a moment and steal myself.
Jeff Sessions is just... Oh, God.
Hold on. I just got to, cheer myself up just a little bit with the... hold on.
Walk on, walk on. With hope in your heart. And you'll never, never walk
All right, okay.
The administration has made it clear that this treaty's nuclear reductions are just the first step in a long march to a nuclear-free world.
Yeah. Wait a minute, I don't understand. Is he complaining? I can't tell if he's complaining or not.
I don't know. That sounds like a good thing, but he's a Republican and he's on the Armed Services Committee, so I imagine that he's complaining that it would lead to a nuclear-free world.
I guess if you're on the Armed Services Committee and the arming part goes away, then maybe
yeah.
the committee and the services vanish right after that. All right, let's give me the setup for that clip one more time.
Jeff Sessions, a Republican from Alabama who's on the Armed Services Committee.
And a pinhead.
Worries that there will be more reductions in nuclear warheads at a disadvantage to the U.S.
The administration has made it clear that this treaty's nuclear reductions are just the first step in a long march to a nuclear-free world.
It does sound like a good thing when he says it out loud, and yet from the setup and from his party affiliation and job, one presumes he doesn't think it's a good thing.
Hmm. Well, Tennessee's Bob Corker is satisfied. Bob Corker
uh-huh.
is satisfied that nothing in the treaty gives Moscow a veto over U.S. missile shield work.
Oh, God, is it 1988 already?
They're going to be told that we, in fact, are continuing to pursue our missile defense in every way possible.
Why always the anger? Why the shouting? Why is everybody so agitated about everything today? Christ.
They're going to be told that we, in fact, are continuing to pursue
who's going to be
our missile
told?
Defense
who's
in
we?
Every way possible.
The commies.
There are
apparently, we're still worried about the commies.
Jesus God almighty. Are we really talking about a missile defense shield? Who are we telling that there's no one there? It's just like the guy who runs the joint just spends all of his time doing bench presses, I think. So, all right, well.
They're going to be told that we, in fact, are continuing to pursue our missile defense in every way possible.
Here's, okay.
And so we're going to tell them that, and then they'll say, okay. They'll still be scared of us.
And also, it's Russia.
What?
They can't afford a friggin' toaster. They're broke.
Yeah. They can't build a car that works. Why do we still worry about them?
They've got nothing. They just like talking to salesmen. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
After ringing her birthday with the ABC News flash mob, I have no idea what that sentence means, by the way.
I don't know. Wait, don't tell me who this is. After ringing her birthday, is that ringing like with the regular R-I-N-G?
Yeah.
Ringing her birthday. Wait, does that
mean? I
guess mean,
it may mean ringing in her birthday.
Or I thought you meant ringing like circling. Ringing her birthday with the ABC News.
And ABC News flash
with
mob.
An ABC News. Okay, so let's assume it's ringing in. After ringing in her birthday with an ABC News flash mob. Why would ABC News have a flash mob?
You don't know.
What kind of goddamn world is this? Jesus.
I'm out of the loop with whatever this. And it has nothing to do with the story. It's just something that leads into it. Anyway, Diane Sawyer was caught off guard again this week when she broke news about an international terror threat to National Intelligence Director James Clapper. During a Monday afternoon interview with three top national security advisors, Sawyer asked Clapper about the morning's arrest of 12 people in London on suspicion of terrorism. Clapper, who is responsible for the president's daily security briefings, had no idea what she was talking about. First of all, London, Sawyer said. How serious is it? Any implication that it was coming here? Director Clapper? London? Clapper responded, before counterterrorism advisor John Brennan stepped in to help him. You meant the arrests of the 12 individuals by the British early this morning, he said, apparently after this guy told him. This is something that the British told us about early this morning when it was taking place. Later in the interview, Clapper admitted to not knowing about the arrest, saying, I'm sorry, I didn't, when Sawyer expressed surprise about the issue. The White House, however, waffled on the story, accusing Sawyer of being too ambiguous with the question, before eventually admitting that Clapper hadn't been briefed on it.
Okay. By the way, just speaking of this,
they're going to be told that we, in fact, are continuing to pursue our missile defense in every way possible.
Listener John just says, forget that. Look at all these knives. Thank you, sir. Okay. The Rick Emerson Radio program coming up next hour featuring Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. Also, our friend Siegfried stopping by to talk about Silent Night, a Deadly Night, showing in glorious and, I believe, very scratchy 35-millimeter wonder tonight at the Hollywood Theater. Also, what is your top five today?
My top five are my my favorite top five sort of non-traditional Christmas songs.
Excellent. Somebody asks about the Diane Sawyer thing. I don't get this story. What does her birthday have to do with asking about terror threats? And where does the flash mob come in? This story is ambiguous, ma'am.
You know, they're absolutely right.
There's no sense to be made here.
I guess earlier in the week something happened to Diane Sawyer, and they felt like it was necessary that the people who wrote this that I was reading.
Was this like the boys in the office forgot that it was her birthday, and so they're trying to work it in somewhere before the week is out? Like, no, it's her birthday. Dude, no, we forgot. We didn't get her a card.
Well,
put it in the story.
The implication being say that she was also caught off guard again. So I guess
she was caught off guard by her birthday?
those wacky folks at ABC News set up some kind of flash mob to surprise Diane Sawyer on her birthday.
Okay.
Because, you know, that's something that was trendy about 2 years ago.
Do you ever wonder if competing flash mobs end up on the same subway or, like, on the same street, headed to the same place for different reasons and they don't really know about each other?
That would be awesome.
Like, there's some, you know, like
when
one of those...
they rumble.
Like one of those Thriller dance mob things, you know, and then it's like a bunch of guys who are just going to, like, you know... Then it's just a bunch of guys who are going to go stand next to each other and eat hamburgers in synchronous motion.
I will say that I am strongly in favor of the flash mob, though. I support anything that just sort of confuses people and upsets the status quo and makes life a little bit more surreal for everyone.
That's my thing too. You know the one that I love, and then I saw this online when it I don't know when it happened. I maybe in London it was the first place. I don't know if it's happened since then, but it was just a bunch of people in a store, and then they immediately just began doing the hammer dance from "You Can't Touch This." And, you know, like somebody had it on the loudspeaker, you know, or whatever. A guy walked in with a boom box. And they all just immediately began doing the "You Can't Touch This" thing. And then as soon as it was done, they all just turned and ran. And they just, you know, they just bolted. And it was like at a really, really like high-end clothing emporium. It was just, and it was fantastic. And then, like that, they were gone. And it was really great.
I loved all the people that went to the Best Buy in the blue polo shirts and the khaki pants.
Yes.
And then it was like just they were told not to actually say they were
right.
employees. Not to pretend to be employees, but just to stand around.
Look pleasant.
And if anybody asks them what they were doing, they're just say, "I'm waiting for a friend." And then Best Buy got completely freaked out because they didn't know what to do about it and called the police.
Yeah, I like, well, you know, and this isn't really the same thing, but it's like the reason I love, as much as people sometimes make fun of this, it's the reason I love that goth day at Disneyland every year, which is a sort of variation on the gay day, which, and I don't think they're the same day. There's gay day, which is where it's, you know, they just gay folk and they're, they have families now. They go to Disneyland, and it's just, you know, and then the Christian, you know, right, gets all cranked up about it. Disneyland says, "Hey, they got money." That's the great thing about Disneyland, is if you got money, you are equal to them. All money-bearing citizens of planet Earth are equal in Disney's eyes. Doesn't matter. I mean, other employees, you know, that's a little bit different. But if you're going there as a customer, as long as you have green in your hand, that truly is the only color that matters to them. But so they got the gay day, and then there's the goth day, which just results in, like, these hilarious online photo albums
yes.
of just, like, really sad, creepy people with, like, you know, blood tear makeup, and they're standing in front of the Small World ride or something.
I had a friend who went on a goth cruise,
yeah.
and there are a few things more hilarious than photographs of pasty white people in Victorian bathing costumes laying on lounge chairs on, like, a carnival cruise ship.
That's awesome. I'm just a big fan of... I'm just a big fan of what Katie Hafner used to just call the culture jamming. Just a little bit, you know, whatever makes life a little bit more interesting. All right, and so forth. Here is Don Taylor.
Police in Florida said an attempted robber was arrested after apparently dropping his cell phone during a struggle with his intended victim. Investigators said Ryan Haynes, 19, of Largo, Florida, pulled a gun on a mentally handicapped McDonald's employee outside the restaurant Sunday night and demanded money.
I wonder if that was deliberate or just luck of the draw.
No, it's McDonald's. I think, what are the odds?
Yeah.
Police said the victim was forced to the ground after telling the robber he didn't have any money, and Haynes attempted to take his car keys. However, the victim fought back, and Haynes fled, apparently dropping his cell phone in the process. Officers said they used the phone to identify Haynes as the suspect, and he was arrested less than 2 hours after the incident.
Well done, sir.
He's charged with robbery with use of a firearm and in jail on $50,000 bail.
Of course he is. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, brought to you by Squires Electric. That is squireselectric.com, their website there. And you can contact them via the telephone if you'd like. It's 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609, as we head toward the wrap-up of this year. So we are now at, what, so it's Wednesday, which means, so next week is the, so next Wednesday, the 29th, 30th, 31st. Jesus, there's only like 9 days left in this year. So it has been an interesting year for everybody and for us here as well. Getting Legion of News off the ground as well as the Rick Emerson Show, and Squires Electric is up to make that happen. So if you haven't enjoyed the knowledge that this program has jammed into your listening holes, you can thank those folks for being a big part of it. SquiresElectric.com is their website. So as you head into 2011, whether you are looking to remodel your home, whether you're going to be expanding your existing business, whether you're going to be duplicating offices and getting a second or a third office, whether it is you just want somebody to go through and just give your electrical system a good scouring top to bottom and make sure that it's not all going to start, I don't know, sparking and fraying or whatever it is it does.
Does that actually work? Scouring your electrical system?
Well, it's sort of an intellectual scour.
Is it sort of like, your car engine? You like just lift up the hood on your electrical
and rev it
stuff
a lot.
Hose it down with a steam cleaner?
That's exactly
what
you do, John. Yes, yes. I don't know. I'm not really sure. Here's the thing. There's so much about this. Like, when I see guys working on electrical systems, it's not that it confuses me in such a way, it does, but it's also just like it's like just a sudden realization of how much there is that I will never know or understand. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Have you ever seen one of the schematics of how how things are wired?
Like a skillet works.
Or just anything. Like
you just go, I have no idea.
Yeah.
How this,
don't know what any of the lines or the numbers or the
and it's like little squiggly things, and then it's like and then it's something that looks like a Greek symbol with like a five above it.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, well, here's your problem. And you just go, well. Sure. And then if you ever go to a museum, where the hell was I? I was at the Museum of Atomic Testing in Las Vegas, which is awesome.
Oh, I've never been to that one. I've been to the one at Alamogordo, though.
At where?
Alamogordo, New Mexico.
Ah, where they did, okay.
There's a nuclear museum there that's just awesome.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance, if you're ever in Vegas, it's off Tropicana, I believe. It's the Museum of Atomic Testing. It is fantastic. It's one of the best things I have ever seen in my life. But including these great, postcards and advertisements from the 40s in Vegas, where it would advertise that you should come stay at certain hotels and resorts, because then on alternate Tuesdays, you could stand on your balcony and watch nuclear blasts happen, with a cocktail in your hand, apparently, and your bones being irradiated. And it was, enjoy a nuclear blast every sundown on Tuesdays. And it would just show, these sort of gaily dressed couples standing in a balcony holding
a big mushroom cloud in the background.
I swear to God, holding cocktails, and, the woman is in an evening gown, and then off across the horizon, Dr. Manhattan is being created, as there's just a thing just going off, and then you could go back in and game, and they just saw nothing wrong with that. But you just see all these inventions and creations and radiation retainment or containment devices, but all of them developed in 1852 by some math prodigy who was 9 years old. And I look at it and I realize I have no idea how any of it works. And so that has less to do with, that's not even a generational thing. It's just we've all known the guy who could pull apart a toaster and then just stick it back together again. And who just did it because it amused him.
My dad did that.
Engineers are all like that, and it's like, and I just, that's just knowledge I do not have access to. So, but fortunately, you don't have to have it, because you got access to a telephone, which you also can't figure out, by the way, just between you and me. You have no idea how that works. It's a mystery to you. You are flummoxed by the existence of it and the fact that it works.
It's magic.
That's right. It's 503-252-1609. You dial those numbers, and that'll put you in touch with Squires Electric for any kind of wiring in your home or business. SquiresElectric.com. Here's Don Taylor.
Crude oil inventories have dropped in recent weeks, and oil prices have spiked to over $90 a barrel. Natural resources analyst Sean Broderick at Uncommon Wisdom Daily says the recession reversed the price rise, but now things are turning around.
The poor man's Trilby Lundberg is what he is.
We were normally on a path for higher prices. It really got...
That's not a real person.
I love Sean Broderick.
He doesn't really exist. Hold on. Let me ratchet down the teletype here in a second. Let me see if I can just...
We were normally on a path for higher prices. It really got derailed by the global recession. Now that the recession seems to be over, we're probably going to see oil prices head higher again.
Okay, then.
Oh, he's great. Broderick says rising prices are something to be expected with an improving world economy.
Now we're seeing that economic activity come back. That means that a trend that already existed in oil toward higher prices is starting to reassert itself. And so... You might consider this kind of a return to normal.
He sounds like Benny from L.A. Law.
He sounds kind of like the shiny guy.
I don't have that handy, but yes. Wait, hold on. Let me see if I can find that really quickly. By the way, speaking of oil and crude oil going up and whatever, because it's a sign of a recovering economy, it must be really nice just to no matter what is happening, you can just, you know, you can come up with an explanation for, well, why
the
is it?
The economy's terrible. Nobody's making enough money. We got to raise the prices of crude oil.
Exactly.
Everyone's making money again. Prices are going back up.
Why is everything so expensive? Well, the terrible economy. Why is everything so expensive? The awesome economy. And so this guy, let's see, this guy you are noting right here.
We were normally on a path for higher prices. It really got derailed by the global recession.
Sounds a lot like this guy here.
Shiny, a slang term for great used in the television series Firefly and the movie Serenity.
Which is really unbelievably true. In all cases. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment news.
All right, here's your entertainment news for Wednesday at Legion of News.
Activision's mega-popular Call of Duty Black Ops officially raked in $1 billion in 6 weeks of sales, according to Variety, outpacing the previous highest-grossing video game, Modern Warfare 2. Black Ops grossed $650 million in sales in its first 5 days alone, and players have logged more than 600 million game hours already.
So our friend Seamus, who is sort of our... we have a lot of, unsurprisingly, a lot of listeners who are really into Black Ops. Our friend Seamus plays that a lot, and he... Did I read that email on the air?
He's 100 million game hours are Seamus alone.
I can't remember if this is a thing that he sent me that I was going to read or I did, but a thing about how he had to go to Walgreens to buy eye drops so he could keep playing. You might have been gone.
You didn't. Yeah, I didn't hear that.
It might have been gone. I'll find it and read it again. He sent me this thing where literally he said he had to stop playing for a while because he had to get in the car and drive to Walgreens because he could no longer see. And he had to be able to see so he could get headshots, or whatever. But he told me the most insane thing about Black Ops, and which is that I guess as you're when you're in the game lobby, basically, there's a marquee, and it's like the headline ticker in Times Square, and the marquee is just giving you all of these real time stats because it's an online multiplayer game, and all of these real time stats like the total number of man hours that have been spent playing the game and the total number of in universe kills for all people everywhere playing the game, the number of cubic tons of earth that have been moved via explosions in the game. And it is, he gave me the numbers from like 3 weeks ago, and it was unbelievable. It was like 900, you know, billion man hours or something, or whatever, you know.
Yeah. You know, 600 million man hours.
Yeah, and that there was
game hours.
And that there had been, you know, like 4.25 billion kills that had taken place or something. And it's, you do realize in a way, like, why we're, you know, I mean, we're either not advancing at all or we're advancing too fast. I can't figure it out. It's one or the other.
Actress Lindsay Lohan is being investigated on an alleged misdemeanor battery charge, as Betty Ford Center staffer Dawn Holland claims she got into a dispute with the 24-year-old. No arrests have yet been made regarding the incident. Holland alleges that Lohan and two roommates violated curfew policy and tried to sneak back inside the center without being noticed. Lohan reportedly refused to take a breathalyzer test and then pushed Holland. TMZ reports that Lohan has filed a formal complaint against Holland and claimed the staffer actually berated her and grabbed her before she pushed back. And it's also been reported that Dawn Holland, the employee at the Betty Ford Center, has been fired for speaking publicly about the incident. The Betty Ford, on the Betty Ford website, they posted a statement all about, you know, confidentiality and the trust of the people who come to them and all kinds of stuff. And Holland gave an interview about the incident to TMZ and explained the story had already gone public and that Lohan was vilifying her and the Betty Ford Clinic failed to support her, and that's why she went public with her version of
it. It must really suck to be an employee there, and when Lindsay Lohan comes in, and, you know, she's assigned to you. You know, and you're going to be the one who has to, you know, track her, take care of her or something. That's just, you know.
You're the one who has to deal with her when she sneaks out and tries to sneak back in after going out drinking with somebody, one of her roommates, and then she shoves you.
I mean, I think that the allure of working with celebrities must wear off really, really, really quickly when they're strung out.
You think?
By the way, just a guess, Seamus actually is he says, I have now played almost 350 hours of Call of Duty Black Ops. I'm playing it right now. I'm always playing it. It came out November 9th, by the way, and so a little quick math indicates that is an average of 6 to 7 hours a day, every single day since it came out. Well done, sir.
I don't have that kind of attention span. I have never been able to devote that kind of time, even anything remotely that kind of a time, to any game, no matter how much I love it.
I think the only time I ever did, the only time I ever spent that much time playing a game was on the original Quake, where some friends and I had see, this sounds familiar. Some friends and I had formed our own media company, and but that went horribly wrong because we also had broadband. I think for the first time in our lives, all of us had broadband at once, and Quake had come out, and so we just spent every day, all day in the office, deathmatching on Quake. And not actually working or getting any income or revenue of any kind, and then it all went to hell.
And so you and I formed a media company. We don't do that.
That's what I'm saying. But
we
see,
actually do our job.
This is the game systems at home have saved us, though, because that's the thing. Is like
if it was different, we would just be sitting here in the studio playing Left 4 Dead against each other.
I have to tell you that I like to think that when it comes to certain aspects of my career, that I've been motivated and I've tried to be always moving forward. And this one other guy in particular who worked at the company with me, again, an exceptionally smart, very, very talented guy who in his own life has gone on to accomplish great, great things, has got a very, very impressive career going right now. So he and I separately, you know, have managed to accomplish.
It's Paul Lindman, isn't it?
Yes. We've managed to accomplish a few things. It's not like either of us was just like a slacker by nature, but I swear to God, you put us both in a room with that game and broadband, and we would. I remember one morning where.
You all right over
yes,
there?
Yes, a little thing.
Oh.
I remember one morning. Sorry, to clear my throat. I remember one morning where I picked him up at his place. We went to the office, and it was like there was not even any pretense. We went to the office, we shared an office upstairs. We went in, we sat down on either side of this desk, not unlike you and I right now, actually, with a computer facing each of us, not unlike you and I right now, except instead of saying, let's do a show, let's, you know, figure out what's next for the business, we just sat down, and he looked up at me, and I looked at him, and he went, well, all right, shall we? And he just fired up the Quake, and it's like, and then we looked up, and it was like 6 p.m., and the entire day had just vanished in just a hail of frags and grenades, and it was sort of awesome. But not surprisingly, the company didn't really last.
The last game I played that I actually lost time like that, and really not 6 hours worth, but I would lose amazing amounts of time playing Katamari.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like rolling the ball around and doing stuff, and I would think, okay, I've been playing this for about a half an hour. I can go get on with my life. And I shut the game down and go do something, and I realize I've been sitting there for like 3.5 hours.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, damn it, how did that happen?
Yeah, Lara was like that with Katamari when it first came out because it's like it was just so hypnotic and just so, and you don't really, you know, you're just doing the same thing kind of over and over again, and there aren't a lot of markers along the way to indicate how long you've been playing, so
yes.
It's easy to lose track of it all. You're listening to a Legion of News. Here's Don Taylor.
A legendary London zebra crossing featured on the cover of the Beatles album Abbey Road has been designated a heritage site. Heritage Minister John Penrose said the decision to list the black and white crossing in North London was a fantastic testimony to the international fame of the Beatles. Paul McCartney, John Lennon, George Harrison, and Ringo Starr are seen walking across the road in the picture on the sleeve of their 1969 album. The crossing is outside the Abbey Road studios where it was recorded. McCartney welcomed the news, which comes in a big year for the band after their songs went on sale at Apple's iTunes for the first time. McCartney said, it's been a great year for me and a great year for the Beatles, and hearing that the Abbey Road crossing is to be preserved is the icing on the cake.
All right, can you please now to tell me what each of the Beatles is wearing on the cover, approximately?
Well, I know Paul was barefoot, because that was part of that whole Paul is dead thing. So he's just wearing And John, I don't know what they're wearing. I know that John had a beard in the picture. I remember that he was bearded. I really
John
don't remember.
John is wearing a white suit. Paul is wearing he's wearing a charcoal suit, no shoes, holding a cigarette. George is wearing all denim, and Ringo is dressed in a suit with a boutonniere, I believe, because they are respectively attendee, corpse, gravedigger, and priest.
Uh-huh.
I think that was the whole conspiracy theory of the, you know, the Paul is dead thing.
Oh, okay. Abbey Road's the best-selling Beatles album on iTunes in the United States since the band's debut on the site in November.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Really, that it's Abbey Road?
Apparently so.
Well, all right.
That's one of my least favorite albums of theirs. So, but no one asked me. The accident that sent the Spider-Man stunt double to the hospital was a result of human error, according to the Actors' Equity Association. In a statement, the union said they'd worked with the Department of Labor, OSHA, and the production to determine that the cause of the accident at last night's performance of Spider-Man was, in fact, human error. Christopher Tierney had to be hospitalized after falling approximately 30 feet during an acrobatic scene towards the end of Monday night's performance of Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. Scott Fisher, president of the company that builds equipment for the show's aerial stunts, told the Washington Post that Tierney's rope was supposed to be clipped to the stage at one end and his back at the other. The stage crew would have been responsible for making the connection for hooking him up. The actor is responsible for making the final check that he's good to go. It's sort of like packing your own parachute. Several members of the Broadway fraternity went online to criticize the production, which has suffered several delays and high-profile accidents. Rent star Adam Pascal wrote on Facebook, "I hope Tierney is okay and sues the S out of Julie, Bono, Edge, and every other a-hole who invested in that steaming pile of actor crappling." Yes.
I got to tell you, under no circumstances would I ever let an actor have the last check of anything.
No, that's kind of surprising.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous. There is no way that I would ever just decide. And plus, if I was an actor, I would not be one of the last guys to check my own thing, because that just seems like an ass covering move by the guys running the play.
And you've got like stunt coordinators
yeah.
and stunt people and Teamsters. There should be somebody there whose whole job is making $25 an hour just to stand there and make sure the thing is clipped to the actor.
You don't let Brandon Lee check his own gun.
Yes.
All right. Well, on that note, we should do this. There we go. That is bringing the curtain down on this installment of Legion of News. Coming up next hour is the Rick Emerson Radio program at rickemerson.com, featuring Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. Also, our good friend Zig Fried coming by to talk about tonight's Grindhouse Spectacular of Silent Night, Deadly Night, Top 5 from Don Taylor, and more. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemerson.com. Legion of News comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kenakoa. As always, thank you for listening, and we will see you again tomorrow at noon for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Have a fantastic Wednesday.